So I'm going to cut to the chase, and this paper compiles a variety of studies that have looked at what would happen if a limited nuclear war were to break out between India and Pakistan. And what these studies looked at was the impact of 100 Hiroshima-sized bombs launched at the alternate country and what would happen. Well, for those of you who remember what the two nuclear bombs that were ever used in the world in warfare did, it's immense, absolutely immense. So 20 million people would die in major cities in India and Pakistan. There would be incredible radioactive contamination throughout the region. But not only impact in that area, but impact globally, because the soot and smoke and fires that would be raised up into the troposphere actually block the amount of sun that can get to the Earth's surface and would result, as we know from some other studies over the past two decades, would result in climate cooling. Well, this is not my way of addressing climate change, I can tell you. So here's the famous graph of where our temperatures have gone over the last 50 years, and within days, the temperature would drop by about 0.7 degrees centigrade. Dramatic impact. This map is quite difficult to see, but basically what you're seeing here is the estimated reduction in growing season, which is defined as a frost-free period of days. So the changes would be 10 to 20 days reduction overall, most importantly in the areas of large grain producing, so the middle of the United States, middle of Eurasia, and Southeast Asia. You would also see a marked reduction in precipitation. So with climate change, we know, as we can tell from Hurricane Sandy, we are getting a lot more precipitation. Well, we would have a marked decrease in precipitation with this event. On average, worldwide, precipitation would go down by about 10%. But if you look at the numbers on this graph, map, the areas in the boxes, again, the major grain-producing areas, show a reduction of 40 to 50% reduction in precipitation. So before you tell me this is science fiction, I'm sorry, I don't go along with this sort of thing, it's actually happened before. Now, it wasn't from a nuclear weapons, it was actually from a volcano back in 1815 in Indonesia that was a dramatic eruption that resulted in a marked decrease in temperature worldwide, and it was called the Year Without a Summer. So in that summer, worldwide, there were frosts that occurred once in June, once in July, and twice in August, markedly reducing the grain production worldwide and actually doubling grain costs. So the worst impacts were in dense population areas of Ireland, France, Switzerland, and India. So I'm not going to show you all the graphs, which you can find in the paper, and you can either find the paper online. There's some copies in the back of the room as well. I'm just going to show you a couple samples. This is a somewhat complicated graph. The x-axis is the percent change in yield over the 10 years of impact that this nuclear winter will occur, and the y-axis shows the frequency with which the results came up when they put it through a variety of various climate models. So they varied what time of year this occurred, what was the overall temperature in general from, you know, variations in sun output, etc. So a whole variety of climate modeling was done to create this data. And overall, basically what it shows is that for a period of 10 years, there is on average 10 to 20% reduction in the major grains that are produced in the areas that were looked at, which were the areas that coincided with the maps I showed you before. This is a little easier to understand map that is or chart that is much more clear. And again, it's really to point out that this reduction in grain production doesn't just happen in the first year. The effect continues, although it lessens over the last several years of the decade after such an event were to occur. And so this is a chart looking at the rice production. Now, the data that's presented in this report takes into account the direct impact of these 100 nuclear weapons, Hiroshima-sized bombs, causing the sudden cooling from the soot in the troposphere, actually, the reduction in rainfall, the increased potential for frost, but it actually doesn't take into account a variety of other factors. The increase in UV from ozone depletion, the disruption in petroleum supplies affecting not only running our farm machinery in this country, but also pesticide and fertilizer production, which relies on petroleum products. The amount of land that would be taken out of production because of radioactive contamination, and of course the collapse of the distribution system. So this report looks at what are the impacts then of the price of these grains on the world's population. Well, in the world today, about a seventh of our population are chronically malnourished. 925 million people live below the level of daily intake that is needed for a healthy life. Actually, in addition to that, if you look at the impacts of what the market will do to import countries that have to import the majority of their food. So Northern Africa, 150 million people are reliant, 45% of the population, on food imports. In South Korea, Japan, Malaysia, over 50% of the food is imported. So if you get hoarding, if you get a reduction in crops that aren't then going to be imported, the countries that are going to be most impacted are those who have to import a lot of their food. So the marketing studies that were done based on this information show that an average one-year decline in food production would cause an additional 40 million people to become malnourished, and the cumulative effect over 10 years is adding 215 million people to the malnourished ranks in the world. 10% decrease puts this entire group at risk of famine if it persists for an entire decade. And again, as I said, market turmoil that was looked at by a variety of reports will cause a large spike in food prices. And ultimately, we would see, I'm going to skip this one, potentially a billion people in the world over the following decade from such an event who would die of starvation. Now, we can't know for sure how devastating a famine would be after this kind of event. But given that the world's level of malnutrition is this bad, we do estimate that up to a billion could be at risk. And therefore, these findings really should require us to have a fundamental change in our thinking about nuclear weapons. How many nuclear weapons are in the world today? People who don't work on this issue, what do you hazard a guess?
Five thousand.
Okay. When I give a talk like this to young people, and I ask them specifically, how many nuclear weapons the U.S. have? I get the answers like 20. Maybe, and then they look at me and they go, well, maybe 50? There's 20,000 nuclear weapons in the world today. There's a picture of them. This particular, the numbers on the left side are the numbers of weapons that are actively deployed, many of them on hair trigger alert, in other words, able to be delivered to their target within 15 to 30 minutes. So you can see who the overwhelming holders are of the nuclear weapons, and that, of course, is Russia and the United States. The next highest is estimated to be France at 300 and on down the line. So we now have 9 countries in the world, and now we know that it's not just the United States or Russia which could cause an incredible calamity, but obviously an exchange of nuclear weapons between two other countries in the world that could cause devastating impacts worldwide. How are we going to make that change? We need to look at these larger arsenals of the U.S. and Russia, because those are the ones that are influencing how many nuclear weapons are desired, are considered status symbols in other countries. One Trident nuclear submarine carrying 96 warheads, each of which is 20 to 40 times more powerful than the Hiroshima-sized bombs that were used in this study, which could wipe out 100 cities and the surrounding areas with one attack. We own 14 of these submarines, and we are launching into a budgetary system over the next 10 years that says we need to upgrade and have new submarines to deliver all these nuclear warheads. I would rather see the money go to the NIH, to a public education, to the care of our veterans, as we've just heard. So we need to take action on this. The sad thing is most people don't know about this information. So PSR and the international organization have been working to try and get more of this information out through humanitarian organizations. The Red Cross internationally passed a resolution last November, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society, saying that as a humanitarian organization, we need to create educational programs to inform people about this, to abolish nuclear weapons. So that is really a wonderful advance. And IPPNW, Ira Helfand, the author of this report, and PSR are working very hard to educate our own American Red Cross, educate our other humanitarian agencies, that it is all our responsibility to abolish nuclear weapons. Because you know what? We could do a lot more with that money than we would by creating more nuclear weapons. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions or comments. Questions for Catherine? Yes, over here, please. Thank you.
Where are those 14 Trident submarines located? Well, I know several are in the port near Seattle, and there are regular events happening there to try and raise awareness of the Trident nuclear submarine base there. Thank you. Right. There, obviously, some of the submarines are cruising the world in the oceans as we speak. Other questions? So I encourage everyone to join one of these wonderful organizations that spoke today and get on the e-alert list. And even if you want to limit what you do with these organizations, it's really, really helpful to influence our policymakers, because they, too, don't know this information, or they're not being pushed to take action on this information. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.